Hey, welcome to the Garage. Big Jim O'Brien, your host here. Thanks for joining us. Got a good one for you this week, man. We're going to start off. We're going to talk to Will Power. Third place at St. Pete. IndyCar season is underway. He's down in Austin, Texas. They're getting ready to go race at COTA in about a week or so. That's a tough gig. We want you to go down to Austin during South by Southwest and just go around and hang with people. Yeah, so we'll check in with Will there. And then Joe Crosby will join us. You do not know the name Joe Crosby, but you know the person whose car he owns. He's the guy who owns Neil Armstrong's Corvette. That's right. Remember, I don't know if you've heard this, but back in the day, all the astronauts got Corvettes, and there was a dealer that actually sold them Corvettes for a dollar when NASA told them they couldn't keep them for free. This was the car that was featured on the Grand Tour last week that James May was driving on the 50th anniversary of the first landing on the moon. Joe owns the car, and it is a great story, so we'll talk with Joe Crosby as well. But we start off with our buddy Will Power, IndyCar, third place in St. Pete. How you doing, bud?
Doing very well, thank you. How are you?
Good, doing great. Good to talk to you. I have to admit, a little upset with you. I went and saw Bob Seger over the weekend and talked to him and got a photo, and I thought that was pretty cool. And then I see your picture with Mario Andretti, and I'm like, Will had to top me again. That's a that's a great photo, both of them. But the one with you sitting at the table with just the thing of milk.
Yeah, that was a great breakfast there with Mario. Yeah, really cool to have breakfast with him, and it was a great photo, wasn't it?
Do you? It's a silly question because you've been doing this long enough, and you're so successful in your own right. Do you fanboy at all with any of these drivers?
Mario or AJ
or the answers.
I actually am. Yes, to hear Mario's stories because as a kid. Yeah, you see these guys racing, and they're like superheroes to you, and that really never leaves. So just so cool to hear the stories he has to tell about, you know, the days in racing when it was seriously dangerous and losing people, you know, multiple people a year. So, just a guy that raced through so many different eras of racing. It's crazy.
And could do anything behind a wheel. I mean,
anything. Race NASCAR, race Formula One, race sports car. He did everything.
So I have to talk to you about St. Pete. Congratulations on the podium finish. You know, a lot of times people say you can't win the championship the first week, but you can lose it. Out front for a while, but there were moments, especially on the pit exit, the whole race, it felt like people were just holding their breath and seeing if they could get out on the track. Is this undercut overcut thing going to be a thing all year in Indy where everyone is really aggressive to get out in front of somebody?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. I mean, the cars have been built to race well, and obviously the series is so competitive now, you're going to see a lot of that sort of racing. Yes.
Well, like even there was a moment with you and Scott, it wasn't coming out of the pits, but still there was a point with the transition where you could have a couple times just really driven into him hard, but you raced him clean. Is that something in the moment you're aware of, or is it just the way you drive?
I think it's just, you know, two guys giving respect, but racing really hard and wanting to keep the position. Not wanting to crash out. I mean, you know, it's a real art to race well, hard, and not crash. And, you know, Scott and I have been doing it a long time. We respect each other. And there's some just really good, hard, fair racing, you know.
Is there any concern then with maybe some of the younger drivers that, you know, they're trying to establish themselves in the sport? So maybe that spot that you and Scott could respect and hold your lines, maybe they're not going to be so forgiving, or they're going to push a little bit deeper than they probably should.
Yeah, that's true. You know, everyone has to go through that phase of learning and understanding, you know, where the threshold is. You can definitely overstep that, and you know, which we've all done throughout our careers. And there's a lot of young rookies in there, but I mean, you know, some of these young guys. Think about Rosenqvist. He's had a lot of experience in racing, and you know, he's plugging in. At a good point in his career, you know, he's got enough experience to know how to race well and clean.
I wouldn't say easier to drive. Is the car, do you have a better understanding with the body type after having a full season? Because I still, when everything that we saw, Will, on the onboard shots, I don't think people understand how much you work in that wheel during the course of the race.
Yeah.
I mean,
you do. Yeah, I mean, honestly, everyone has a better understanding of the car now. So it just stepped it up. Like, it is way more competitive than it was last year. When you look at practice, and you got 20 cars covered by 7/10 of a second. I mean, it's like it's never been before.
Do you think, and I don't know, it's hypothetical, but do you get to a point maybe during the season where maybe people sandbag a little bit more, not wanting to show their hand?
No, definitely not. And no one's sandbagging it during the season. They're all giving everything they got. It's just too competitive to try and, hide speed because you're just going to confuse yourself. You have to go.
So what does COTA, I know you're down in Austin, South by Southwest. What does COTA mean for you to get that win?
If you could win
the first one at COTA.
I mean, yeah, it would really be cool. And obviously for many reasons, the championship, it's the first time we've been here. It's the best facility and road course in the U.S. It would be great to win first time out there.
Do you think we all get obsessed with the Giant Hill and the technical part of the first two segments? And then the long straightaway that we don't pay as much attention to? Me, I think the back half of the course is where the race is won and lost because it feels like people bleed off a lot of speed there.
Yes, it's certainly a very technical ending to the lap. That's where the lap time's made. I mean, it's the whole track. It's such an amazing circuit. There's so many technicalities and complexes. It's like nowhere else. It's really, really, really cool.
Well, don't do what Earnhardt did. Remember Dale Earnhardt in NASCAR when they had the first Brickyard race? He wrecked on the second lap because he wanted so bad to win the race.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Don't do that.
I don't want to do that. Believe me. That's the last thing I want to do.
Well, you seem so calm. How amped up were you in St. Pete?
Yeah, I was giving it everything I got. Everything I got. I wanted to win that race.
I don't think you have a choice this year, though. You have to go 100%. It's cliche, but you have to go 100% in this series.
You can't. You can't leave anything on the table. It's too many good guys.
Okay, so when are we going to be in Australia then? I mean, come on. It's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, I don't know. I really – it would be so great if we could do that in 2020. So great.
So does Roger kind of be the – what would you call him? Is he sort of like the guy that acts as the go-between for you guys to make that happen?
No. No, it's the IndyCar series that's doing the good negotiations. I think that thing's going to fall, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. Sorry. I just got some wind blowing. That looks...
Well,
yeah. 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 So, yeah. Yeah, I've got the ball on a trophy here. Something's going to fall. And I was like, you need to watch that.
Yeah, don't do that. So,
yeah.
Man, all right. Well, Will, I know you're busy down there in Austin. We wanted to check in with you. Congratulations on the podium. It was a great race. I'm telling you, as a fan watching on TV, it had everything. There was passing. I mean, during the course of the race, there was strategy and everything else. Was it what you expected from it with all the drivers too?
Yeah, I thought it was, it was a typical IndyCar race. Fierce, very competitive and very physical.
How does Simon Pagenaud get enough Sharpie to color his car like that? How does Simon Pagenaud get a Sharpie big enough to color his car that yellow?
Yeah, no.
Right. Is that blinding at all to you?
No, not really.
The TV people told him it was washing out while he was coming by, that they couldn't get a focus on it. It was seriously that bright. Yeah.
Yeah, it is bright. No question.
All right. Well, good luck at COTA, Will, and we will see you up here in Detroit, obviously for the Detroit Grand Prix and Indy as well. You're the defending champion now, man. I mean, this is a big deal.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Can't wait.
Live it up, man.
Thanks, mate.
All right. All the best. Talk to you soon, Will. There goes Will Power back into the Austin, Texas nightlife. Tough gig, man. Tough gig. Don't forget DetroitGP.com for the Detroit Grand Prix here locally. If you're listening to the podcast, of course, it comes the week after the Indy 500. It's really weird. It's weird and cool at the same time that they have a race a week after the Indy 500, but they do a doubleheader, and that's the only doubleheader they do all season. So these guys spend pretty much the whole year focused on Indy, and then they've got back-to-back races here in the Motor City. So again, DetroitGP.com, give them a plug. Now,
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Chevrolet sponsors that race here, and I'm sure Chevrolet, because it's funny, when I spoke to some of the people at General Motors, they were not aware of Joe Crosby. They knew about the Corvette they were about to talk with Joe about, but they didn't know the whole story, so they started calling him. I think there's going to be more with this car. His name is Joe Crosby. You saw the car on the Grand Tour. James May was here in the States. He was driving it down to Cape Canaveral, Florida. This is the original Corvette owned by Neil Armstrong. And Joe Crosby is the guy who owns it now, and he is a Corvette lover. And it's a great story, too. If you're a fan of astronauts, if you love Corvettes, what he did and how he got the car, we'll get him on the phone here.
Hello.
Hey, Joe. It's Jim O'Brien at WCSX up in Detroit. How are you, sir?
Fine, you?
Wonderful, man. Thank you so much for taking time out to talk about this. So,
sure.
We all saw the video on the Grand Tour last Friday night with James May driving your Corvette now and the whole story about Neil Armstrong, and it was amazing. I never knew that his original Corvette existed from that dealership, but and you have it. But, Joe, can you take us back and explain to people like how this whole connection between astronauts and Corvettes started?
It started in 1960. Jim Rathman, who had a big Chevrolet dealership in Melbourne, was a big fan of the space program, and also he was a big race fan. He won the Indy 500, I think, in 1960 or 61, and he was just a car guy. Well, he got a hold of Alan Shepard. I think there's even some pictures on the internet of him giving Shepard a new 60 Corvette convertible. Well, then NASA pretty much told Shepard that he couldn't keep it because he was a government employee, that he had to return the car. So he took it back, and Rathman said, well, fine, I'll just sell it to you for $1, and if you tell the other people that's in the program, if they want a Corvette or a family car, I'll sell it to them for $1, and every year they can come back and turn it in and get a new one. And that was how it started, and it went through 1970, I believe, is when it was the last ones that got it, or got the Corvettes. But I suppose some of them got family cars. And through the years, you know, I knew about the dealership and the Corvettes, and I had some interaction with some of the astronauts at different times through the years and their Corvettes, and they lived on the edge in their job, and they lived on the edge in their private life and their hot rods, pretty much.
Well, Joe, that was something I was going to ask you about, because I know that James was talking about in the Grand Tour episode that these guys would get their hands on these Corvettes and modify them as well, because you had those big, long straightaways out there, Kennedy. And wasn't he talking about one of them? They were getting close to 180 miles an hour with some of these cars?
No, not back then. They would, most any of them, even the stock ones, would run, you know, that car that I have, not doing anything to it, would run 140 miles an hour, just the way it was. But they would change the rear ends in them and do little, you know, modifications. And most, every one had the 427 motors in them, which was the biggest one that Chevy made at that time. And they were fast just the way they were. I mean, that car that I have now is the 22nd older Vette that I've had and restored, if you would. And would, you know, they've all had the big motors in them, and I would take them apart and make them new again, and that had been my intention when I got this car, was to do the same thing. You'd just completely disassemble them and put them back to where they were when they were new. And I was contacted by some people at the Corvette Museum and asked me what my intentions were, and I told them, and they said, well, before you do anything, could we have a couple of people come look at the car and talk to you about it? And I said, sure. So they two fellas came and spent a couple of days here, and I took it to a friend of mine's, got a restoration shop, and we put it up on a rack, and they must have taken hundreds of pictures, or maybe a thousand, I don't know, but many, many pictures over a couple of days there. because everything on the car is original. I mean, the springs had the tags on them, and it's got the paint marks, you know, how they marked them when they were new. And I thought about, they just kind of pleaded with me. That may not be the correct word, but they wanted me to leave it as it was, because everything on the car, at some point, he touched and handled. And once you restore a car, you can't ever go back. It's like unringing a bell. You can't do it. So I thought about it, and I said, well, you know, they're right. That's what this car needs to be. It needs to be left just the way it is. And I set about I cleaned it, just cleaned it up. It'd been sitting in the basement for 30-plus years, and got it running and got the brakes working on it. And they put, in that 3 days out there on the Cape, they put way over 200 miles on it out there, and it ran just as good as it did in 1967. I was very surprised, because all I had done with it was just up and down the driveway and on and off the trailer, because I don't drive it on the street for, you know, someone to run into it, and then what have you got?
Right.
And if they hit my trailer, I can get another trailer. So
Joe, now you didn't. So how did the car get into your hands? What was the timeline for that? How did that happen?
Well, it was either the summer of '79 or '80. The lady that owned the car, she and her husband, it was at a horse stable in Georgia. She had a horse, and it was an inquiry at that time. Big block Corvettes were a dime a dozen. I think I had at that time, I had a couple of them, and we talked to her, and she, you know, she said, yeah, I'd like to get rid of it. I want to buy a van to haul all my horse stuff in. Well, it kind of fell by the wayside. We got a phone number, and several years later, two or three, he said that we got a hold and spoke to him, called the house, and I talked to him, and he said, no, he said, I'll put it in the basement, and I'm going to do a father-son. He had two sons, young children, and we're going to do a father-son's restoration on the car, and I'm not interested in getting rid of it. And that was pretty much the end of the conversation. So in Christmas of 85, I was up there visiting my parents for Christmas. Called him, and we talked, and ended up going to his house. He invited us over. It was either just before or after Christmas. And went over and met the wife again and the two boys, and he were talking, and he had the car in the basement. And we went down, and it had become a shelf. Had boxes and stuff, and it was on jack stands. And we were standing there talking, and just in a general conversation, how did you come by the car? And he said, well, we had decided we wanted to get a Corvette, and we'd had all the dealerships and this and that and couldn't find one. And then in December of 67, a dealership called, a salesman called, said, we got this car in on trade. Why don't y'all come look at it? And, you know, so they did. And he said, I almost didn't buy it because it had the big motor in it.
Well, Joe, wait a minute. So at this point, though, do you know that this, do they know what they've got? Or they just know they've got a big block Corvette?
Well, see, at the time, that was all it was to me, was just a 67 Corvette. So we're standing, we're in the basement, and he told me about how, you know, they got it, that they traded their car in and bought it and this and that. And at some point, it was, where did the car come from or what? I don't, you know, just one of those questions. And he said, Jim Rathman Chevrolet. And, I mean, of all the dealerships in the United States, and here's this car now that I lived in Brevard County, and here's this car from Brevard County. And he said, I worked at the Cape for NASA, and, you know, everybody had them and this and that. And then he just said, yeah, the car belonged to Neil Armstrong. I said, no, it didn't. But I said, I knew about the cars. I just didn't know that happened to be one of them. Well, so he goes upstairs and comes back down with a handful of paperwork, and I said, well, there you go. You know, there it is. Here's this car that started here, went up there, sat in the garage, and no one ever, they knew that it had because I think the dealership told them at the time. But see, at that time, it didn't mean anything. It was just a car. It was nothing particularly special about it at that time. So he was pretty solid. No, he was very solid. But he was just going to keep the car and redo it. So fortunately, they had a very big house in a big and fine place. And they had a heated air-conditioned basement. He had a workshop and a family room and other stuff. So the car was inside, which is what saved it. It was not outside. Okay. Well, for the next 30 years, maybe once a year when I'd be up there, call, hey, how you doing? He's the nicest guy in the world, just a super nice guy. And every time it was no, I'm going to do this and that. Well, what have you done to it? Nothing, you know. Well, I talked to him Christmas of 2011, and he told me, he said, no, I'm not going to get rid of it. I said, it's been down there 30 years, and you haven't done anything with it. He said, but I'm retiring in February of 12, and I'm going to have plenty of time, and I'm going to redo it. And I said, well, your sons are grown and have kids of their own now. He said, yeah, but I'll have the time. And that was pretty much the end of the conversation, and I didn't think any more about it. Well, he called towards the end of February, almost to the end of February, and just said, do you still want to buy the car? And I said, sure. He said, well, I thought about it. He said, I ordered a new 2012 red coupe. If you want it, come get it. So I went up there. It took he and I and my brother 4 hours to get the boxes off of it and get it out of the garage and get it on the trailer. And when I left there to come back to Florida that day, about 1 o'clock, they were heading to the dealership to pick his car up, the new one. So that's how I came by.
So Joe, what is that car worth right now?
Depending on who wanted it and what they were going to do with it. Be honest, I don't know. That's a hard question. I've had a lot of inquiries through the years from all over the country. I've had a couple of people fly here from California to look at it for a private collector. Had a museum. A couple of guys flew here to look at it for the museum. That's where I would like to see it ultimately end up, is somewhere where, you know, where it's a part of history. To me it is anyway, and a lot of people it are. As many shows and as many people have seen that car, every one of them, I mean 100% of the people that know what they're looking at, have all said, I'm glad you left it that way because it's part of him. And if you know, when you restore a car, it's the same car.
Right.
But it's not, I think in that video that the Grand Tour made, I think at some point the guy that was driving it, he made some comment about that everything in there, he said he touched this and looked at the tachometer or whatever, what rev counter, I think he called
right.
it.
That's
the part
yeah.
that people appreciate. And I've had it, like I say, a lot of car shows, the Cape, they called a few, 2 or 3, 4 years ago, and they had some big deal out there and wanted me to bring it. And I took it out there and put it in the they call it the Rocket Garden there where the visitor center is. And they had made this beautiful plaque, like a display board to go with it that had a little bit of history of him and had a picture of the car and some of the rockets on it and a little history about the car and it's got at the top of it, it said Neil Armstrong's Fast Rides. And people, most people that come through there are from not in this country. But everybody knew who he was and knew what the car was. And people would ask, can I sit in it and take a picture? Of course. And at car shows, sometimes people want to sit in it and take a picture. And I had no, you know, I mean, it's, if they want to do that, I'm right fine. I had a fellow call here, or it's been 3 or 4 years ago now, and he was an interpreter, and he said, I have two couples from Sweden that belong to a Corvette club over there. They're here, and they would it be possible for them to see the car? He apologized for calling the house, and I said, of course. So he brought them up here. I backed it out, and they stayed here about an hour and a half taking pictures and sitting in it. And that was, you know, that's what it's about. Our Corvette club here, we have a big show once a year, and we'll have several hundred cars from all over the South, just Corvettes, and I always bring it to that. And last year, it was earlier in the morning, and this lady was there, and she had a little boy about, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years old. And she was taking pictures of him standing there with the car, and she asked me, she said, is this your car? And I said, yes. And she said, well, my son is in the 6th, 3rd, 4th, 5th grade, whatever, and he's doing a paper about Neil Armstrong. And, you know, he was just tickled to death when he saw this car. And I said, well, why don't he sit in it and take some pictures? Well, this kid sitting in that car grinning from ear to ear and just tickled to death, you know, and just things like that.
See that, you know? And like what you said, Joe, when we were watching the Grand Tour, you could see the emotion in James May's face. I mean, he's obviously a history buff, but to be driving in a piece of living history, Neil Armstrong's Corvette, the scope of that, really, for a guy like that who's seen so much in his career, he seemed to be genuinely just tickled pink that he was driving in that.
He was, from what I saw there. But see, I was around them all the, you know, the 3 days that we were out there. They had, I think there was either 15 or 16 of them that flew here from England and brought vans full of all kind of equipment. Camera equipment and drones and all. Well, you can tell some of that stuff in that's on the internet, that video, that they were used a drone to follow it down the runway. And during that, the second day we were there, they had the first plane that they had a Navy 737 transport jet that flew over the car right down on the ground. Now, none of this is in the video, what's on TV.
Right.
They had three passes over it, right on the ground. Then they had a Black Hawk helicopter. Then you can see the Huey and a little bit of it in that video. Yeah. And then towards the end of the day, they had an F-18 that made three passes over it, right down on the ground.
Wow.
I mean, it was just, it was a, to be able to have that car, if you were a billionaire, I doubt seriously if you could arrange to go on that shuttle landing strip and have four military aircraft fly over your car. But because of who it was, who it belonged to. I mean, there can only ever be the first person to do anything. After that, it still counts, but to be sitting in something and driving something that belonged to the first human to ever set foot on the moon, and all of the other things that Neil Armstrong did. He was a combat, flew, I don't know, 50 or 60 combat missions during the Korean War.
Yeah.
Flew all those experimental planes, crashed them, and then was the first person to set foot on the moon. I mean, he lived an amazing life. He was an amazing guy.
Well, Joe, we just want to say up here in Detroit, thank you for doing what you're doing with that car, to keep it where it's running. We know it's a piece of American history. And between Woodward with the Dream Cruise here and, you know, the unveiling of the new mid-engine Corvette sometime soon, I know our friends at General Motors are all excited about what you've got there too, and we got to get it up here to Detroit. We got to get that car up here. We do.
If you, as many places that has wanted to have me bring it there, you know, to display, and it's just, you have to have an enclosed trailer, or you have to do, you know, one of those transport companies.
I'm good friends with the guy who owns Tim at Reliable, so that's about as good as it gets.
Well, we might can talk about that.
Okay.
I wouldn't say no to it if we could do it. But, you know, my concern is the safety of the car. You know that nothing
right.
happens to it. You know, it's just a piece of history.
Oh,
it is.
Anyway. No, it is. To everybody listening to us right now. Joe Crosby and the man who owns Neil Armstrong's Corvette. It was great talking to you. I'm serious. We got to – Terry Rattigan, Jim Campbell, some of the guys at GM, we got to get this done. I'm calling people out here in Detroit right now, Joe.
If y'all want to set something up, you got a hold of me. If we can do it, we'll do it.
God bless you for doing what you're doing with this car, and it was an absolute honor talking to you. And next time I'm down in Florida, I'll come look you up.
Give me a call. You got my number.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Oh, there it goes. Seriously. Think about how many different ways he could have screwed that up. But we talk about all the time, like there's certain people, like the Bullet Mustang. Sean, the guy that owns it, he could have redone the whole car, but instead he kept it honest with all its little imperfections. That's what gives it character, right? Look what Joe did with Neil Armstrong's Corvette. And again, we put the clip up too. You got to see the Grand Tour thing. James May, just the way he's looking, his eyes as he's driving the thing is just fantastic. Again, all right, I'm out of here. Big Jim O'Brien, I'm your host at WCSX Big Jim's House Morning Show on the radio in Detroit. You can listen to us online as well. And you can also hit me up on Twitter at WCSX Jim. I'm sure we'll have more coming on.
Old people in cars.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.